There are many people who believe that 9/11 was an inside job, that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States, and even that Dan Brown's novel, The Da Vinci Code, is based on fact. Why do otherwise skeptical people make leaps of faith to explain events in terms of conspiracies when the official explanations are often more reasonable and arguably more likely to be true? David Aronovich, who writes a regular column for the Times of London, examines this phenomenon in his new book, Voodoo Histories, The Role of Conspiracy Theory in Shaping Modern History. It's published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello.
Hi there.
Has conspiracy theory played a significant role in shaping history, as your subtitle suggests?
Yeah, I think it's played a role. I mean, if we think about the conspiracy theory that I begin the book with, which is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the proposition which was widely believed after the First World War that there was a secret Jewish plot which had actually led to the First World War, I think we can see that this had a major effect on European anti-Semitism in the interwar period, and then obviously leading up to the events of the Second World War.
And we still see the Protocols of the Elders of Zion cited by some people. And many of the conspiracy theories, you point out, have an anti-Semitic side to them. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because people who are looking, for an underlying secret and international story of why the world is like it is, look for an underlying semi-secret or mysterious international group of people. And certainly up until the foundation of the State of Israel, Jews in diaspora were people who had a secret language, Hebrew, communicated with each other, were both present in societies, but also to a certain extent seen to keep themselves separately. So in a way, they conformed to the need for this group of people who had, if you like, the secret way of doing things.
Well, wasn't there a conspiracy that grew out of this conspiracy? Because you mentioned that there were secret societies in Germany that funded different editions of the book, and I would assume that I would think of that as a real conspiracy.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about the Protocols of the Elders of Zion was that it was indeed a forgery created by the a guy working for the Tsarist secret police in the 1890s. But the thing is, he never foresaw the use that this forgery would be put to in a period, after all, when Tsarism and Tsarist Russia had actually ceased to be. So in that sense, there was the kind of minor conspiracy of creating the forgery, but there wasn't the major conspiracy of saying, let's get rid of the world's Jews by unleashing this forgery upon the world.
Protocols have been proven false over and over again, and yet it continues to live on. Can a conspiracy theory ever be really proven to be false? And if it is, does that ever convince people to change their minds completely?
Conspiracy theories are often very Hydra-headed. If you look at 9/11 conspiracy theory, you know sooner, in a sense, debunk one aspect of it than people who believe in it will discover something else which becomes fundamental to it. And also, conspiracy theories are highly circular. The very fact that somebody comes up with a preposterous conspiracy theory can be adduced to the idea that there's misinformation being put out there by official circles to bamboozle people.
Well, for example, you mentioned 9/11, and there are people who will tell you that the Mossad was behind it, and others who will tell you that Jews were warned and there were no Jews in the building, when if you just look at the list of people who died in the World Trade Center bombings, there were quite a few Jewish victims.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you discover about conspiracy theories also is that they tend to mutate according to where they're more convenient. A perfect example is when I was first talking about this book about 7 or 8 months ago in England, a taxi driver said to me, have you heard the one about swine flu? And his notion was that the company making Tamiflu, the flu vaccine, had actually released swine flu onto the world deliberately. Now, within a week on the internet, you could discover an Iranian version of it. But in the Iranian version, the company that had done it was an Israeli company, Gilead, and the reason that it had done it was because Dick Cheney had bought shares in it. In other words, the Iranian version of this conspiracy required Israel and America to be brought together.
And any number of illnesses have been blamed on conspiracies. HIV/AIDS, some people believe, was unleashed on Africa as a kind of a post-colonial conspiracy.
Sure, and in a way, it is much more comforting to believe that there are evil but incredibly competent people who are in charge of the world, rather than that we are at the mercy of epidemics or accidents or coincidences and over which nobody has any control.
You open with a quote from the novelist Don DeLillo. He says, "This is the age of conspiracy, the age of connections, secret links, relationships." Why begin with that quote? Because it represents the opposite of everything you're trying to point out?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also because he was very aware of, and in some sense was actually communing with, that spirit that he felt was very much out there. I mean, it'll be 50 years in 3 years' time from the first JFK conspiracy theories. If you think about the thousands of books that have been produced, the amount of effort that has gone into the discussion of the different people who might have done this and so on, and yet all without a scintilla of evidence, none. If this is the conspiracy theory has been evidence-free for 50 years nearly, and yet has been widely believed and has grown, if anything.
That's because it's hard to believe that one man could have pulled it off. In earlier cases, for example, people didn't believe that Pearl Harbor could have been something done totally in secret, that FDR had to have known. Gore Vidal still makes that claim.
Gore Vidal, excellent man though he is, has very rarely come across a conspiracy theory that he doesn't endorse. It's something which those of us who enjoy him find sort of increasingly strange. The Pearl Harbor theory, which arises out of the defeat of the America First movement in 1941, which is very powerful up until Pearl Harbor, gradually mutated from Roosevelt provoked the Japanese into a deliberate attack, hence to get his war against Germany, although by means they don't quite explain, mutated into he knew the precise timing and place of the attack because the Americans had broken the Japanese codes.
Often because Roosevelt was also linked to Jews. Some people even called him Rosenfeld. My guest is David Aronovich, whose book, Voodoo Histories, The Role of the Conspiracy Theory in Shaping Modern History, is published by Riverhead. How would you define a conspiracy, and how different is it from a secret plan?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a really key question, that, because there are lies told, there are people who do things in secret and so on. But I think a conspiracy theory is an idea of an underlying explanation which is considerably less probable than the suggested cause.
But haven't there been real conspiracies? Some might reasonably argue that COINTELPRO was a governmental conspiracy. The Watergate break-in.
The Watergate break-in is an absolutely perfect example of why it is that complex conspiracy theories on the whole don't work. I mean, what do you actually have at Watergate? You have a desire to get secrets from the Democratic Party offices. So a ludicrous group of people is assembled to do this, led by this fantasist, Gordon Liddy. And how does it break down?
Who later becomes a very popular talk show host.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a good idea.
That's right. I guess you don't have this in your background, but they are spotted by a security guard. Now, in any great thriller in which there was a conspiracy thriller, what would have happened to that theory? What would have happened to that security guard, let alone the policeman?
He would have been killed, of course.
Easily. That would have been 101, wouldn't it? And then Nixon is then implicated disastrously for him. Why? Because they haven't sufficiently been able to wipe the tapes that he himself made of his own conversations in the White House. I think that proves just how difficult a conspiracy theory would be. And if we wanted a further example, why, for instance, was no weapons of mass destruction planted by these incredibly capable Bushites in the Iraqi desert. That would have been simple, wouldn't it?
But conspiracy theories do grow out of what I think is something reasonable, questioning the official version of events. After all, the Gulf of Tonkin attack wasn't what it was claimed to be. There were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And perhaps if people had been questioning and been a bit more suspicious, some of the things that disastrous things like the Vietnam War and the war in Iraq might have been avoided.
It's possibly true, but actually conspiracy theories don't help you get there at all. You can say, is the government right about this? And is it telling me something that's true? But say, take the Gulf of Tonkin, for instance. It's pretty clear that LBJ and his advisors thought that American destroyers had been fired on during the Gulf of Tonkin.
Speak to Daniel Ellsberg. He'll disagree.
He certainly will. But, I mean, also, you look at McNamara's own papers afterwards, and I don't think he had a particular reason to lie about it. And you see that that's what they thought. And that's much more usually the case. Certainly our Prime Minister in Britain certainly thought that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now, what you have to allow for is the fact that governments make mistakes.
One of your main points is that conspiracy theorists generally fail to apply the test known as Occam's razor.
Sure. Which essentially, if you boil it right down, is that on the whole, the simplest explanation is the best one. You mentioned about lone gunmen. Lone gunmen have a much better record of actually being able to assassinate people than complicated plots to assassinate people. If that wasn't the case, Fidel Castro would be long dead by now. Why? Because it's a very simple operation. If you want to try and kill somebody, you have the opportunity, and you don't care if you get caught. There are no moving parts to your conspiracy. You just do it. If you're lucky, you're lucky. If you're not, you're not.
And whoever was supposed to put that powder into Fidel Castro's shoes to make his beard fall out didn't do a very good job.
Or the exploding cigars.
Now, conspiracies really were a major part of 1930s politics. The Nazis came to power by claiming there was a conspiracy. Stalin had any number of show trials based on conspiracies, and of course he accused Trotsky of being engaged in a conspiracy to kill him.
He certainly did. The great Trotskyite conspiracy theory, which was widely believed amongst sections of the pro-Russian left, and indeed by the American ambassador in Moscow, looked at these show trials and thought, yes, there must be some truth to it. The accusations were so ludicrous that these people, these ex-revolutionaries, were agents of the Japanese, agents of the Germans, and so on. And they also said that almost every major industrial accident that had happened in this hugely industrializing country, over rapidly industrializing country, were not the result of its inexpertise or its incapacity to apply technology correctly, but were the result of deliberate internal sabotage. And as a consequence of this, hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives in Russia, and it became a major area of division on the left for the next 20 years.
Well, a lot of it was also concealed, but what about Stalin's plot against Trotsky? That was all too real. Can't we call that a conspiracy?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I try to answer in the book, did Stalin and the Stalin people believe there was a Trotskyist plot? And I think probably the answer is they did. They actually convinced themselves that there was, or there was something a bit like the thing they were describing. And even if maybe the NKVD, the forerunner of the KGB, went a bit far in getting these kind of confessions out of people, nevertheless, it showed an underlying objective truth about these people. So what I don't think happened was that Stalin sat down with a group of people and said, OK, we're going to now do everything that we can to pin the blame on Trotsky and get rid of, you know, hundreds of thousands of party members and the top military, etc., because we think it's in our interest. In other words, I think they were as intoxicated in some sense by the notion of a conspiracy as everybody else.
But they must have known it was nowhere near the size that they were claiming it to be.
I wonder whether they did. I mean, once one of these things got started, it became in people's interest to denounce other people and other people's interest, and in their interest also not to have anybody suggest that they were slacking in their denunciations of others. This thing has a tremendous impetus.
Is there any precedent for the recent Bertha movement in the history of conspiracy theories?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty. There are plenty of suggestions that people throughout history, that people are not somehow what they seem, that they have kind of passed themselves off as something else, that they have, if you like, their cuckoos in other people's nests.
But part of the problem is when you just dismiss it and say that's silly, then you were accused of being part of a conspiracy yourself. And I have a feeling that's perhaps why the mainstream media were so willing to give that so much attention. Later, we got earlier, Bill Clinton was connected to the Vince Foster death to a point where there was so much so many news stories about it, you had to wonder whether it wasn't really true.
That really is an unbelievable episode. And when I was researching back, because people have forgotten about the Vince Foster and Clinton conspiracy theories, although they're actually being spread by some of the very same people who've been spreading the Bertha theories and so on. It was unbelievable how many people and how many people in the mainstream media, as you said, kind of bought into aspects of that.
A listener put a comment on our show page, says, I think automatic dismissers are just as apt to be wrong.
You're not entitled, and I'm not entitled, to automatically dismiss anything, although I think I am entitled to say, here's a pattern, or something seems less likely to me.
And it's interesting that so many of the conspiracies are concerned with the deaths of people. Princess Diana's death was a conspiracy. Marilyn Monroe. Someone told me that the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson was a CIA black op designed to foment race war in the United States.
Well, that's a terrific one, and you can see how bendy that theory has to get in order to kind of work itself through, and how it will probably satisfy the preconceptions of the person who gave you the theory.
Now, are you trying to convince conspiracy theorists that they're wrong with this book? Won't the true believers just see you as part of the bigger conspiracy?
Oh, they sure do. I mean, I've been accused of being actually working for the CIA and the MI5 by people who have never heard of me before. They've heard of me on a radio show. I'll be part of the plot, and you'll be part of the plot for having me on your show.
Well, I'm giving you an opportunity, but I'm also reading what listeners say. One says, it's true that we are quite lied to by our government and our overly powerful multinational corporations.
Yeah, and of course, sometimes people are lied to by their governments, not as often, I think, as they'd like to believe. But isn't it interesting how they would rather think their government was lying than that their government is wrong or weak?
Well, we've had so many questionable official governmental versions of stories that I guess it's a natural reflex to question them. Anyway, David Aronovich's book is called Voodoo Histories, The Role of the Conspiracy Theory in Shaping Modern History. It's published by Riverhead Books. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.